Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello and welcome to this, the 250th episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. None of which would be able to be produced if it was not for listener support. If you like what you hear and you'd like to support this podcast, you can go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile where you will find a drop-down box that will lead you to links to either our Patreon page, you can buy us a one-off coffee, or you can go to our merch store where you can buy t-shirts, tote bags and the like. That out of the way, I'm going to tell you a little something about this week's guest. You will know him by his alter ego, Mason Storm, or his Instagram profile, which is Genius Mason Storm. I don't really want to give too much away in this intro, but Mason has very much mastered the art of manipulating social media. There's a couple of instances I have in mind that we speak about in this episode. One being that quite some time ago, he said that he was going to out Banksy and reveal his real name. And another when Banksy's Monkey Parliament sold for just over $4 million, there was questions in the media of who painted it. So Mason Storm duplicated sections of it and said to the world, I can neither admit or deny it was me that painted it. Which is a pretty genius move, right? But that said, don't go thinking that Mason Storm just relies on clever social media posts. He has also got the technical ability to make those claims viable. So maybe it was just a double bluff. So why don't you go and Google his work while you're listening to this episode? And you can make your mind up for yourself. So please, come with me as I spoke to the genius, Mason Storm.
You have to excuse the rather sinister mask. I put the other one down somewhere. Old age is creeping up. I can't find it.
Oh, you're quite all right. How are you, mate? You good?
Yeah, good. Mad busy, but good busy.
Good. All right. I'm just having a look in the background now. at your image of Christ.
Knocking around. This one I did, I did the before and after.
Yeah.
So the actual finished one, the one that was modified or preserved, that's going out to a show in, where is it? Austria.
Nice.
Shipping out tomorrow.
Nice.
But yeah, so I've got the other one here, so my fave.
Yeah, I don't know if you've listened to any episodes, Mason, but I do have 7 questions that I ask each artist.
Okay.
How would you explain what you do to someone that didn't know your work?
I don't know. What would you call it? I'd call it a delightful blend of art, blasphemy, selfless self-promotion, ego-driven mania, basically.
I have noticed over the time that I've been aware of you that, yeah, you're not afraid to mention your ego, are you?
Well, do you know what? It's part of the thing that drives the vehicle of what I do.
Yeah.
In that, I think the whole point of you can probably see that if you do mention your ego, then you're aware of it, and it's not really the thing. But I think it all sort of started with the years ago. I didn't know about I was going to do the Banksy reveal thing.
Yeah.
And
wait, what year was that?
Oh, blimey! That's 2010, I think it was.
Yeah.
So we had the whole, basically like a year of non-stop Mason knows, and I was going to reveal him and reveal. And then obviously the more I spoke about it, the more grief I got. So the more grief I got, the more I like to prod them with the,
of course.
I'm a superstar, I'm a genius and all that nonsense. And it got people so angry, but they all spoke about it. And that's what drove that whole thing. In the end, it was only a publicity stunt anyway, but
that's what I was going to say. Was it a get up or was it just a
that's all it was, you know. I mean, in real life it couldn't be further from the truth. I'm normally quite self-deprecating, and you'll see that on most of the posts.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah
if someone does believe that I am this creature 24/7, then it
Of course.
That's
the thing of wearing a mask, isn't it? You take it on and take it off, become that person when you're wearing it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not entirely sure why the missus makes me wear it around the house. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
She probably likes the other character. That's what it is. She likes
preferably with sunglasses as well.
Yeah, exactly. And a hat and stuck in the corner.
Well, the episode that's out at the moment as we speak is Heath Kane.
And, okay.
Heath is well known for his Batman masks over the face of the Queen. And we was talking in there about the different masks that we all wear, depending on who we're with at that moment. So none of us really know the true us, do we, you know?
I think it's one of those things. I mean, someone was saying before about you can meet 100 people and walk away and every one of those people have a different opinion of you.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember I met a girl from school, I don't know how many years ago it was. And she went, "Yeah, you were always really cocky." And I thought, was I really? She went, "Yeah, you were a right cocky basket." I went, "My, I didn't know that." She went, "Yeah, she's lovable, but like really cocky." And I thought I was just like, you know, everyone's fave, drifting through, everyone loving me. And it turns out I wasn't what I thought I was. So I think that's the point. I think it's a thing with artists as well, especially today. You can't just be that artist. There has to be something else that goes with it, because I think part of the popularity for me, without sounding too big-headed, it's the mystery of what I used to do and all that kind of stuff. And then that drives the narrative of, you know, how I work today.
Yeah, well, I've always been quite fascinated with the ego, and the ego shouldn't be a derogative word, because we've all got one. We all, as you was just saying, and as I mentioned with Heath, you know, it depends what part of the ego we put on show to who we're talking to. The only true me is the one that I see when I'm on my own, when no one else is looking. 100%. You know,
my shtick, or whatever you want to call it, is, you know, I'm always happy and jolly and upbeat, and that's what the people want. They don't see you on your down day. They don't see you on your off day. Yeah. They don't see you, you know, when there's grief in your life. None of you see any of that. And for me, that's probably the case of I don't want to share that with people, but I think people come to my page because they like me. They like the fun. They like the laughter. I don't want to be the sort of person that's, you know, they tune in on a day to have a look what's going on and I'm moaning about whatever. I don't think, as I work, that's not my job. My job is to, again, don't want to sound too up your own behind, but my job is to try and lift people up if I can. And that you know, that's a joy for me to do. In general, I think, yeah, you're right. We all wear the masks and I think some people are ready to share stuff with people and that can be quite cathartic for people that maybe don't have a support network so they can go onto the internet and go, you know, the missus has left me, the dog's died, you know, the house is falling down. And it's not a bad thing because, you know, they'll receive that help back. But for me, it's not really, I don't think that's, for want of a better word, that's not my job.
Going back to childhood, was there any creativity in home growing up?
There was. It was bizarre. My dad was a foreman, a builder. But he always loved art. And I remember when we were kids, we had like down in the basement where we used to live in a flat years ago, a massive big mural on the wall that he painted. I think it was Mickey Mouse pushing Donald Duck in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
And he was doing that. And I remember when I was about 15, 16, he went off to art classes in the evening.
Brilliant.
And yeah, so that's what he always did. So and they were always encouraged. We were always encouraged to do something that we enjoyed doing, regardless of, you know, whether it's art or whatever else. Myself and my brother did a lot of judo together. One of my other brothers was a really good diver. So you said it was always something in the house that was a positive thing. So we always had these outlets.
Yeah.
But I mean, art-wise, I'm probably the only one that's really ever pursued it to any real degree. Like I say, my dad did it as a thing that he just enjoyed doing. So, but yeah, so everyone else in the family were manual workers apart from me.
And was he pleased? Yeah. Was he pleased when you picked up the paintbrush?
Do you know what? It's one of those things. I went through until I'd say, probably late 30s, early 40s, or maybe late 40s, doing lots of other jobs that weren't art-based. But I spent all of my youth up until I was about 25 going to a youth centre where we did art every single night. That was my thing to get, you know, to free your head up from all the nonsense during the other stuff I was doing. So I sort of slipped into it. So there was never any real like, well, well done or great for you to go. You know, I sort of just slipped into a full-time art. And yeah, so there was never any discouragement, let's put it that way, but I just sort of just slipped into it. So it wasn't a big major thing where I suddenly said one day, you know, I'm going to be an artist from now on, and that was it.
Yeah. And was it London or London area that you grew up?
Yes, London. I've been in Hackney all my life, basically.
Oh, okay. Okay, so, nice.
It's been a while. Well, I've always lived around here. I love it.
So how did you slip into it? You said about doing it in the in the youth clubs up until, you know, whatever age, but how did it come about you showing your work? And if it could be a double barrel question, did you become Mason Storm at the same time?
Pretty much what it was. So there was a mate of mine, well, it wasn't even a mate at the time. There was another street artist by the name of Grafter, and he was doing a show locally, and he'd spotted something I'd put up. I think it was on one of those photographic sharing websites. What's it called? Flickr. So I put up a little sculpture that I'd done. There was nothing to do with the painting at all. I put up a little sculpture and he saw it and contacted me and asked if I want to put some bits in the show. So it was only a little tiny gallery. I put a few bits in the show and they sold. And I thought that was quite interesting. So I put the Mason Storm name down because at the time, all the guys in the show were all street artists and they all had these interesting, you know, I didn't want to just go on with a, you know, a straightforward, boring name. So I picked that one at random from a Steven Seagal movie.
Okay.
And yeah, so that's when I was born as that. And also it sort of worked for me because I wanted to completely take myself away from all the other jobs I'd done.
Yeah.
I didn't want people from the past cropping up, seeing that name and knowing I was here, there, or wherever. I mean, it's a long and convoluted story, but there was lots of different jobs I did in the past where I wouldn't want people from the past knowing where I am today, effectively. Yeah, I mean, just the thing that it's terrible that some, you know, sometimes your past sort of defines your future. And I think sometimes it's better to just chop it off where it is. The jobs I did put me in contact with lots of people on the other side of the legal, you know, framework. So I probably would have been putting people like yourself away 20 years ago, and everything. So I've been a barrister. I did a lot of bodyguarding for a while. I did a lot of intelligence work and all that kind of thing. And it doesn't gel well with what I do today.
Yeah.
And the stuff I did some stuff for an intelligence magazine, which involved talking to a lot of people, especially from secret services and people on both divides of what went on in Northern Ireland. And I got to meet a lot of people that a lot of other people would like to contact if they could get hold of them again. it's a very, very messy thing. So for me, it's better that it's just chopped off. I mean, I'm sure some of them would recognise the voice, but
that's a part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's why I just want to keep it all one thing. That's not me anymore. I'm not defined by that. I suppose it might inform what kind of work I do, but that's just not my life anymore, thank goodness.
How long ago was Mason Storm formed?
It's got, so I would say around 2010.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So not that long ago. I was obviously doing the art part-time, just, you know, in the evenings, whatever, just as myself, and, you know, never went anywhere. Went to little local shows here and there. Didn't realise, so I'd picked it out because I've done all sorts of martial arts since I was about, blimey, a kid, effectively. Yeah. And so I was watching a Steven Seagal film and he was called Mason Storm. I thought, that's a great name. So I picked that and it's set, but then I didn't realise that it's also the name of a female porn star.
Oh, you've got a mask on, so I don't know whether you are actually her or not.
You know what, I've got the chest for it, I think. But yeah, so everyone's really disappointed when they meet me.
Yeah. After that first episode of becoming Mason Storm, where did your art go after that? Or where did you go with your art after that?
So generally what I was doing is I did a lot of, obviously, I painted, like I say, for years and years and years. And then I started to get into a little bit more conceptual stuff. And I think, again, we're going back to the whole ego thing. It's like anything. You can put a post up on Facebook and go, the sky's blue. And then someone will go, you're an effing idiot. The sky's green. You get all that. So I think artists were a little bit, it's almost a little bit of arrogance, is that we say, right, I've got something I want to say. I have to say it out loud. And for us, or for me, that's done with art. So I'll put things down that, you know, a lot of my paintings are religious. I'm not religious in the slightest, but lots of my stuff is religious because I like the iconography. I like the imagery.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also I put stuff in there that are probably, you know, it wouldn't go down well with the church. So that's me, you know, kicking back against my upbringing, to, you know, Irish parents. So, you know, it was instilled in you from an early age. And I got right off that path really early.
Yeah.
So did all my brothers. So that's sort of the way it was going. So I was doing lots of different things like that. Then I did a few more pieces that are a little bit more controversial. And that got, you know, a few headlines here and there. And I just thought, well, that's quite interesting. So it was a hard one as well, because you think, well, controversial works, but then do I want to be controversial just for the sake of being controversial?
Yeah.
You know, anyone can do controversial, but it has to mean something. So the subject matter itself has got to be the driving force, as opposed for me, just, you know, doing the Queen with something rude on her head.
It doesn't mean
a narrative there. So I did a little terrorist thing. So it was a little sculpture of a little girl, a mannequin, but she had a mask on like this. But she was covered in bombs and a flat bomb jacket and all that. And they put it in the window of the gallery and people went absolutely nuts about it. They were really unhappy, the local community. And that was just born off the back of, I'd seen a documentary about child soldiers. And it was really moving about these kids that, you know, literally have stuff strapped to them and marched towards the checkpoints and stuff. So that was my way of thinking about that and then voice making it flesh, basically. That's my opinion as it is. I remember they put it in the gallery window and there was loads of grief, and they had a big meeting at the town hall. We've got to get this removed. It's outrageous. And so I went there and said, look, I get it. You know, your kids are asking you what this is. And, you know, it was down the road from the Finsbury Park Mosque, where at the time Abu Hamza was there. All that stuff. And not long been the train bombings over here. So it was, you know, the timing was right, but maybe wrong. And everyone went nuts about it. So I said to them, look, I get it, but I'll tell you what I'll do. There's 100 people here. put a tenner each in the pot. It's only £1,000. I'll take it out and destroy it, and I'll give that money to the War Child charity. And then suddenly, they weren't that concerned about the sculpture anymore.
Yeah.
So for a tenner, you know, your sensibilities will be quelled because I can deal with it, get rid of it. It's only going to cost you a tenner each. Suddenly, it wasn't such a big issue for them.
Yeah.
So, but it worked. I got it in the newspaper as well. But yeah, so my art then sort of went a little bit more, I don't know, say political, but a little bit harder edged. And that's a difficult sell for most galleries. I had a gallery in the West End asked me to do some paintings for them. So I took a whole year doing loads of paintings that were about hypocrisy. Did the whole lot of painting, gave them to them. They went, we can't show these, you know, we'll get firebombed if we put these up. So yeah, so they disappeared into the ether. But so it's that really fine balance. If you're Damien Hirst, you can say what you want, do what you want, and it will sell tomorrow.
Of course.
If your art is like me, I'm a commercial artist. If your art is commercial and you haven't got galleries that are, I wouldn't say brave enough, because that it sort of undermines the galleries, but I understand, because they've got, you know, they've got a financial stake in whatever you do.
Yeah.
So you've got to be a little bit careful. So the works then sort of slip back into the more classical, a bit of an edge, but just not as bad as it could be. I mean, I've got a thing to do for a gallery in Austria, and they want to go take me to the Art Basel in Miami at the end of the year. So their brief was, can you do something, but we want it to be controversial. So, you know, where do I go with that?
Okay, yeah.
So I've sort of picked a subject matter that I think is controversial. I'm framing it in a way that it's not one way or the other. It's a political thing. So, and it's in America, so you can guess who it's about. Is it right? Is it wrong? So it's one of those.
Yeah.
But again, like I say, not controversial for the sake of it.
Well, to be honest, when I saw your work talking about the classical paintings, I did think you was just overpainting a found object, like a found painting.
Yeah.
If you like, I didn't realise that most of them are your paintings.
Sadly, all done from scratch are an absolute nightmare. I did a series 2 years ago for a gallery in Rome. A lot of those were overpainted, like, you know, Bob Ross type pictures, and just overpainted.
People
loved them, and I did a load of a gallery called Stowe Gallery over here.
Yeah.
I think I did 30 different canvases for them, and then we did prints off the back of those as well. So those ones were, but this kind of thing, yeah, they're just, that's what I do. I enjoy doing it, but it does become, you know, that saying, you know, if you do what you love, it never be a job. That's a lie, because it does become a job. Again, I love painting that, but if you've got a painting that's going to take you 6 months, and some of them do, some of them you can knock out quite quickly, but some of them really need a lot of time spent. Well, they do for me, because I'm not a massively quick painter.
Yeah.
And if you're going in the studio every day for 3, 4, 5, 6 months working on a thing, you tune out a bit, and it's not the fun thing it was. It becomes quite a technical exercise.
Yeah.
So that's why I like to do a big bash of painting, and then stop for a while, do some sculpture, mess about with other bits and bobs, and then come back to the painting. Because you can fall out of love with something. It's easy done. Yeah.
Do you sell it just as the painting, or do you make prints of it and sell an addition alongside?
So not every single painting becomes a print, A, for commercial reasons, and B, I just don't want to bore people. So
yeah,
I don't want to do that. I don't want to keep flooding the market, and people, because it does get a little bit like, another one. I'd rather people were like excited about something coming out, as opposed to, well, if I didn't get this one, I'll get one in a month's time. I just try to keep them coming at quite a slow rate, maybe one or two a year maximum.
Yeah.
And that's why
it's whatever works best with you, mate, isn't it?
I think it is and it isn't. I mean, again, I'm a commercial artist, but I also understand that it's, you know, money's tight. And that's why we did like a print run last year or the year before, and there were 30 different prints, but I think they're all 30 quid each, little mini prints.
Yeah.
Then that way, if you can't afford the big, you can't afford the original, you go for a print, you can't afford the big print, well, you've got a chance of getting the little ones.
Yeah.
You know, 30 quid, still 30 quid for someone, but it gives everyone a chance to jump on board, to join the game, be part of the club, to be, you know, a collector, even and just only spend a few quid.
Yeah,
so nice. I like to try and do that wherever possible so that everyone gets a chance. I mean,
in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
The Monkey Parliament prints that went out, I think they were about £350 a pop.
And was that the both sides or just the one side?
So we did the left, the right, and the middle.
Yeah.
So they all sold out. But it was quite easy. I could have sold them for double the money and they still would have sold. But again, like I say, I've got a commercial stake, so is the gallery, but the collectors need to be able to collect them. Yeah. I could have done them at £700 and a big gallery somewhere else would buy 100 of them and stick them in the cupboard and wait, you know, 2 years and then start banging them out at £2,000 a pop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I tried to make it as fair as possible. Obviously, everyone's got to earn a living. I've got to earn a living. The gallery's got to, but, you know, there's no point in alienating your collectors.
Yeah. I mean, that was a good little storm you created around that, wasn't it? Around the Parliament.
Oh, my God, the grief that I got for that. And still get for it. I mean, that's the thing is, we've only got to look on the forums, and yeah. Yeah, they're not overly keen on me, Banksy fans, which is fair enough. I get that. I understand it. To be fair,
So just run through the whole, oh, not the whole story, but just run through the story for anyone that doesn't know it.
So, how many years ago was it now? I think it's about 7-8 years ago, maybe a little bit more. Banksy exhibited a great big oil painting of monkeys in Parliament, and it was called Devolved Parliament. And that sold, I think, 3 years ago now for £10 million. And if you know Banksy's work, then you'll be aware that Banksy didn't really hold the brush that painted those pictures.
Yeah.
So there was a rumour and an allegation that someone else had done it. Some other genius had done it for him. And so, yeah, so I basically have got my version of that painting, which is what the prints came off of.
Yeah.
My version is very, very similar to his version, a little bit smaller. So, yeah, so that's what it was. So Banksy fans were saying I was trading off the back of Banksy. But again, Banksy fans don't know who painted the original one for him. I can't say who painted the original one for him. But it was a great piece, and he did really well out of it, bless him, and quite right. So, I think £10 million it went for. So, yeah, it's not a bad chunk of change. So I thought, if that's available at that kind of price, I'd do one myself.
And what was the edition size that you'd done it in?
I think the left-hand side, the left-hand side and the right-hand side were, if I can remember the top of my head, because the gallery deal with
everything. Yeah.
I think it was 350 or 400 of each side.
Wow.
And I think the center one, because the other two were so popular, I think we did 500 of that.
Wow.
Yeah, and they...
That's not a bad size addition, is it?
No, it's not bad at all. Yeah, especially when you turn around and go, really?
Wow. Yeah.
So that's why it's also good to keep the price as low as we could, because more people can get hold of them. And they were very, very popular prints. So we did, so they sold out, each set of those sold out within about, 5-10 minutes of going up online.
Brilliant.
So the last one that had the monkeys in it was the Bullingdon Club photograph of them all in there.
Yeah.
That I think that was a 300 edition. That went out a little bit slower because it wasn't related to Banksy. So
yeah.
Sold out, but went out a little bit slower. But the others flew off the shelves, as they say. So yeah, it was good. It was good, and it was good to do. It was a great working with the gallery that I was working with Stowe. Their additions are great, and I don't have to do an awful lot. I mean, literally, Jamie that runs the place, he'll drive all the way down, drop the prints off. I'll sign and have a moan up about how sore my hand is signing them.
Yeah,
he comes, picks them up, he gets them printed, he gets them shipped. Yeah, so yeah, I'm lucky to fall. I mean, I've been with a lot of galleries that aren't great, but he puts the work in. And
good. And what artwork that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, be it to you or to others?
One of the first pictures I ever released was a copy of a Caravaggio. It's called Supper at Emmaus.
Okay.
It's a bit like The Last Supper, and it's got Jesus sat there with the disciples, a couple of disciples, and he's got McDonald's in his hand and McDonald's on the side. And that was the first piece I really sold commercially.
Yeah.
And sold to a mate of mine, the original. And so that one for me is probably the one that I'm most connected to, because that's the one that sort of got the whole painting ball rolling. It was like I'd sold that and thought, oh, that's not bad. You can get that for a painting. I'll do another one. I'll crack on with that. So there's that one. A lot of people are obviously drawn to the Banksy stuff. It just is what it is. But I also like doing the commissions for people as well, because they get what they really want then. So it's a weird one. As a painter, you'll paint something that you like for a customer who doesn't exist, that you then have to go out and find, convince them they love it, and then sell it to them.
Yeah.
But pretty much, I mean, I'm lucky, touch wood, I get really good commissions and the people are always nice. So, yeah. So it's a balance act again. You know, it's not like selling. If I sold my soul completely, I would be doing, you know, pet portraits and, you know, paintings of the front of people's houses and all that kind of thing. But that wouldn't excite me.
Horses for courses, as they say.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, you know, there's a million and one people that will happily do that for you. Not me.
And speaking of other artists, Mason, if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, wow. Let me think. So there's a couple of artists that are figurative artists alive today whose work I love. One guy, his name is Mitch Griffiths. He's a fantastic artist. I look at his skin tones and they're just phenomenal. Who else would I definitely have?
Can I ask, is that Griffiths or Griffiths?
Griffiths.
Okay.
He's currently with Halcyon Gallery. So if you go onto Halcyon's website, you'll be able to find him. His figurative work is amazing. There's a guy I've admired for years and years called Nigel Cox.
Okay.
He's a friend of mine now, Nigel. Lovely fella. And he does his figurative characters, but you rarely see the face. Most of them are from behind or maybe from the side. And they're in like very murky, ethereal backgrounds. His work is stunning. I'd probably like to work with some of the sculptors. There's a sculptor stroke conceptionist called Maurizio Catalan.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I love his work, absolutely. And I think Giacometti.
Okay.
Yeah, his work, again, just phenomenal. But there's so many artists out there. And I think that's one of the dangers, one of the problems of being an artist is that it's a bit like a curse, because every time I go somewhere, so me and the missus go to an awful lot of galleries, shows, openings, all the rest of it. And I think if you're not an artist, you can walk into a gallery and go, well, that's nice, I like that. And I can't do that. I'm walking and going, wow, how did he do that?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. You know, the composition, what he's done there. How can I nick that and make it look like mine? How can I do it? It goes on in your head 24/7. But there are so many artists out there. You've only got to go onto, you know, Instagram and just type in oil painters. And there are some phenomenal painters. I mean, absolutely, that no one's heard of, that, you know, do it as a hobby.
Yeah.
And turn out some, you know, exquisite work.
That's the same with any creative field though, Mason, isn't it?
So, yeah, music, you know, so many musicians are still in their bedroom, you know, creating the next big hit, but just don't get discovered. I'll go onto Instagram. If I see something I like, I think that's great, I'll share that straight away onto my page. Have a look at this artist. He's great. she's great. Just yeah. And I think that's what you need to do. I think as artists, we need to push each other. But I find, again, it's probably an ego thing with some artists. Even people I know that know me won't like or share stuff. And yeah. You think, well, I've shared yours. I liked yours.
Yeah, I don't get that.
You're not gonna diminish yourself by raising somebody else up. But unfortunately, a lot of artists think I need to keep it all to myself in case someone sees him and, you know, buys his print rather than mine.
As much as the art world is massive, I believe it's a community, and you'll get by holding hands, you know what I mean? 100%. And scratching each other's backs. That's the way I see it. And as you say, I know many an artist who wouldn't dare do that, you know.
I just don't get it. It's just something that I do as a matter of, you know, course. I mean, I've got, but whatever I do, if ever I'm inspired by another, for example, the guy that took the photograph that I, so that one there was a modern version of The Taken of Christ.
Yeah.
And that was done by a photographer, and he very kindly let me paint it. And again, whenever I display the picture, he'll get mentioned. And I just think that's how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's very kind to let me do it.
I mean, to be fair, by just changing the format, it no longer, the image no longer belongs to that person.
No, the only thing I didn't want to be that person that people keep...
No, you're right.
But... people's work, don't talk to him, don't get involved. Yeah. You get it all the time. I get it. You know, with the Banksy thing, I get that every day of the week. I mean... the stuff that goes on in the forums, I can't even read it anymore because I just get caught up with it. Not that I get angry about it, I enjoy it prodding them. I sort of understand it, but the whole, you know, this hero worship of Banksy, it's, for me, it's like, I sort of don't get it. When I was going to do the reveal, I had, like, you know, grown men with wives and children threatening me, and we're going to put down the gallery. It's like, mate, you've got to, you hold down a job. You got a wife, you got three children, you're a grown man, and you're screaming at me because I'm going to show someone else's face. I understand if you're a fan, but that, you know, that's beyond the pale.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, I mean, truth be known, it's not hard to find out who he is, but it's pointless anyone revealing it because it just ends a myth then, doesn't it, you know?
Well, for me, I mean, that's the whole point. I'm always digging and poking and going, I'm going to do this, I know... And I would never, ever reveal who he is because, A, he's been a great earner for me. Bless him. B, what's the point? You know, you'll ruin everyone's day. You know, yeah. If suddenly you say, right, here he is, that's him, here's his history, and it's a bit like, ugh, you know, the fun's over. And because he has so many followers, would you want to be the person that did that? I wouldn't.
And what do you think you'd like to do if you wasn't an artist?
So for years and years, traveling's my thing. I enjoy traveling a lot. And I'd like to maybe go back to doing a lot more traveling. When I was a bit younger, I traveled a lot more with the judo. We went all around the world in competition and stuff. So that was good fun. But I think when you get to a certain age, I think things aren't important anymore.
You know,
you can earn so much money and then, you know, I don't want to sound conceited, but you earn a certain amount. You've got enough to survive on. Do I need to double that and treble it? And no, not really. Don't need to. I'd rather just spend that money traveling, enjoying people around me. That's what I, you know. So what I'd rather do as a job in the future, nothing at all, to be fair.
No, that ain't too bad. I did see something you put up very recently of David Menkinovsky.
Yeah, I did the course with him. So that's something that I've always been into is special effects, movie monsters. At one point, a good few years ago, I had a company that we made model kits. So like garage kits, we'd make those up and they were like Hammer House of Horror, Star Trek, all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we used to make those in resin until we got shut down by the TV company. When they saw that we'd done Dr. Spock and...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I know that. So we got cease and desist and all that nonsense. So I love doing that. And, yeah, working with David was great. It was only a two-day course, but what a great instructor. I mean, I'd come away at the end of the two-day course with a thing that I thought, you know, wow, I'd buy that because it was great. So I'd quite like to do that. I've got a mate who's on it. I don't know if you know the art. Do you know Shuni?
Yeah, of course. I've got one of his things up there,
Well, his dad and him obviously have been in the trade for years. And I visited John's place a few times up in these studios. And that kind of thing really excites me. So if I had a choice of doing anything art-wise in the future, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, it's a good, it looks good fun, doesn't it?
It's good fun. I mean, they spend a lot of time, they go on set, and the things they get to do every day, you know, someone will come in and go, can you do this disemboweled monkey for us? It's like, how do we disembowel monkey? So that's what I mean.
Tomorrow it's an 8-foot teapot.
It's what they do all day long. So good. I remember I met John, it's got to be 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I asked him to photograph. He was doing a live cast, a tutorial for a couple of fellas, showing him how to do a head cast. And I met him then when we were doing, I was doing photography at the time. And yeah, just known John ever since. But yeah, he's a lovely fella. But that's the kind of thing I'd like to do. So I've got this thing I'm doing for the gallery for the show in Miami, which is going to involve all of that kind of stuff. So, and that's what I enjoy doing as well, is collaborating with different people and pulling things together. So I'm doing a statue or a figure of, I can tell you, what that matter, Donald Trump. And it's going to be roughly half life size. So I've got to be working with a guy that does the 3D sculpture. Then I've got to get the head cast in rubber. Then I'll paint the head. Then I've got to get someone that's going to punch all the hair for me.
Brilliant.
And I've got to send that all off. And I've got a guy who's in Indonesia. He's going to make the suit for all the clothes for me. So that's the kind of thing I love doing, that kind of thing, and seeing it all come together to produce. This is the thing. If you can't do it yourself, there's always someone that can help you out. And to say likewise, you know, me, lots of people, you know, come to me with, to get it sound like I'm Mother Teresa. It's a little about giving back, because I've had lots of people help me through the years.
Yeah.
And that goes literally, right, you know, from people that have shown me how to do certain paint techniques right the way down to someone that doesn't buy my work but shares it.
Yeah.
You know, babies.
And you're saying about the show in Miami via Austria.
Yeah.
When's that coming about?
I think Art Basel stuff, I think it's the 2nd of December. And I think it runs for a week, as far as I know, something like that.
Yeah, and is it being shown in Austria as well, before or after?
No, I'm gonna save that one for. So the Austrian one, I've got an art fair with them in April, and they've got a group show in June, which will be more paintings that I've got, and then that one I want to unveil it for the show. So I think what they're after is the piece that when the press go around and do the first, you know, press releases and the press day, everyone want all eyes on that piece, because it is what it is. So that's why I was sort of thinking around the same sort of lines of Catalan's work, because every time you go anywhere and you see his work, there's always something, even if it's the banana taped to the wall, he'll always grab the headline. So fingers crossed it will do that.
Of course.
It's headline grabbing, but not just for the sake of it. Again, I've always wanted to do a big piece, and I like the idea of doing that one, and it's current without getting myself cancelled. Effectively.
have you got anything else between now and then?
So I've got that. I think I'm in a little group show in Rome. So I did a solo show in Rome about 2 years ago, and that gallery are doing a group show in June, May or June, end of May, beginning of June. So I'll probably be going over to Rome for that one. So basically just little bits and pieces, but they're all over the shop at the moment.
Yeah.
And I've got lots of commission work on, which I just need to get finished, which is good stuff I've always wanted to do. I had a guy contact me from the States who said, I want a piece of your work. Can you do it? What do you want me to do? And we went through a million and one different scenarios. And there's been a Norman Rockwell painting I've always wanted to do. And it's of a little girl outside the principal's office, like in 90s.
Yeah.
She's got the bruise on her eye. And I've always wanted to do that. So me and him worked together, and he wanted certain elements from his life put in that. So that's what I'm doing at the moment, which is going to be fun.
Nice.
And then I think I've got a print release coming out in August with Stowe Gallery again, which is going to be along the Banksy themes. Do I want to be known as the Monkey Man for the next 20 years? Not really, but then again, it pays the rent. So
of course.
You know.
It's called making a rod for your own back, isn't it?
I have done that. That's the thing. I'll get so many people to go, I love a piece of your work. You go, great, what would you like? You went a big monkey base.
Brilliant.
But yeah, I've done loads of little ones just recently for people, and I'm enjoying doing. So I've done some Van Gogh ones, which are quite cool. I enjoy doing those. But, yeah.
And if anyone wants to see what Mason Storm is up to, how can they see your work, be it a website or social media?
So social media, the man that hasn't got an ego, if they go to Mason Storm Genius on Instagram, you find me there.
Yeah.
Mason Store on Facebook, because someone else has got the name. I can't remember the website it's called. MasonStormEnterprises.co.uk. There's bits and bobs on there. That's all getting updated before December, so it'll all be going on there.
Well, Mason, that's all my questions asked. Thank you very much for your time. Worry. Really right, appreciate it.
Have a good one. The embarrassing bit where we've got the fiddle to turn it off.
I'll see you later. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. It's a podcast that's produced with the help of the listener. And if you like what you've heard and you think you might be able to give a little support, there's two ways in which you can do it. If you go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, you'll find a Linktree drop-down box. And in that box, you'll find two links. One is called Buy Us a Coffee, and it's pretty much that. You can make a one-off payment, the price of a cup of coffee. Or, if you're able and want to do it more long-term, you can become a Ministry of Arts Patreon, where you can sign up to support us on a monthly basis, and 100% of your support goes back into the podcast. And if you're not able to do that, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. But we would urge you to follow us on your socials and show us a bit of love that way. Either way, thanks for listening and see you next time. Ta-da.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.